Let's jump out of the phone line. Let's not waste any time. A big, big news breaking in the NFL draft yesterday with the Titans and the Rams swapping for number one. Let's bring in Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com. Scott, when you see the news like that come out, do you get excited? Do you start shuffling all your stuff as well? What does a news like that do for you when you're getting ready for the draft?
Yesterday morning was pretty wild, and I actually had a text message when I woke up, and I was in a daze. I didn't know if I was dreaming, if someone was playing a trick on me, or because, I mean, that was a huge trade. Well, one of the biggest trades in the history of the NFL draft. No team has ever traded up to number one from so far down like the Rams did, going from 15 to 1. So it was a huge move, and it's going to have ripple effects all the way down the line. I think it's clear the Rams are going to take one of the quarterbacks at number one, whether it be Carson Wentz from North Dakota State or Jared Goff from Cal. But then I think where it really starts to get interesting is number two to the Cleveland Browns. I think this opens the door at least for them taking best player available if the quarterback they want is gone. And I think it increases the likelihood that somebody's going to trade up to number two for the other quarterback. I think the Browns, in a perfect situation, I think they want to trade down, even though if I were them, I would recommend taking that quarterback. I always say that unless you have a franchise quarterback, you shouldn't pass on one. But I just think their new regime is going to value stockpiling draft picks and giving themselves better odds of hitting on them. And there could be a market for number two now because we know a quarterback's going one. So if you're a team like the 49ers at seven, the Eagles at eight, or even further down the line, the Jets have been linked to quarterbacks, I think they're going to be talking to the Browns, and I think Cleveland's going to be receptive to it.
Do you think that it's that close as Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, and if you don't get to one, you're going to take the other? Because there are, I mean, they're stylistically, are they different? Because with Goff playing in the spread, Wentz played underneath center, played a more of a pro-style offense. Does that leave where there's a delineation there, or is it really, if I don't get one, I'm going to take the other?
Yeah, I think they're definitely different styles, and I'm not quite as high on Goff as some. And whenever I say this, I feel like I'm denigrating Jared Goff, but it's not the case. I like him. I got him in the top half of the first round. I just prefer Wentz and even Paxton Lynch from Memphis. To me, those are the top two. And then there's a little bit of a drop-off to Goff. I just question if Goff has the upside that Wentz and Lynch do. I don't know, even in a best-case scenario, if Goff is going to be an Andrew Luck, a Peyton Manning. Obviously, that's a high bar, but I see him as more of an Alex Smith type maybe, which is fine, but I'd prefer taking a shot on Wentz or Lynch. But and the other thing that concerns me with Goff is early in his career, he played behind such a horrible offensive line. I think he developed some bad habits, and that can be tricky for young quarterbacks. So, but I think the consensus around the league that it's a Wentz-Goff battle, I don't believe that the Rams have not decided. He would not make that kind of decision and make that kind of expenditure without knowing exactly what you're getting. So I think it's going to be Wentz, but this trade I think also helps Paxton Lynch. It might push him up into the top 10 overall if there's an early run on quarterbacks and really have a ripple effect right on down the line.
We talked about the ransom, and you said this is probably the biggest trade in draft history as far as moving up from 15 to 1 and what they gave up. Is Carson Wentz or Goff or Paxton Lynch really worth what they gave up?
Well, there's no question the Rams paid a big price. And to go from where they did to number one, it was going to cost a lot. But ultimately, I always say it's impossible to overpay for a good starting quarterback. As long as they pick the right quarterback at number one, it's going to be worth everything they paid and then some. Now, if they pick the next Jamarcus Russell, which I don't think is going to happen with any of these top quarterbacks, but if it's their signal caller is a huge bust, then it's going to set them back maybe a decade. But you have to take the chance. I think the Rams are kind of the poster child for this kind of quarterback purgatory where they've had all these premium draft picks. There's talent on both sides of the ball. They just don't have a quarterback, so they can never finish better than 8-8. I think they finally came to the realization we need to do something bold and try to address this once and for all, or we're just spinning our wheels. And then I think the move to Los Angeles played a role in it as well, and I wouldn't be surprised if ownership said, hey, this would be a good year to make a big move and bring in a nice, shiny new toy to be the face of the franchise, sell tickets in L.A., kind of get everyone excited about our team as opposed to all the other entertainment options there are in this market. So I think there are a lot of moving parts in this decision. And just put in perspective, if Carson Wentz was in last year's draft or Jared Goff, they would have been vying for quarterback three behind Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. But they're the top quarterbacks in this draft. And as always, the supply is not meeting the demand at that position, and you're going to have to pay a premium, especially if you want to jump up to the very top of the draft from the middle of round one. So I don't fault the Rams at all for making the move. It's a risk, but I think it's a risk they had to take. And for the Titans' perspective, it's a perfect situation because they already have their quarterback in Mariota, and now they have all of these draft picks, not only this year but next year as well. They can really surround Mariota with the talent he needs to be successful, and there's no more excuses in Tennessee anymore.
Yeah, if Tennessee doesn't jump to the top of the AFC South and start contending with Indianapolis, this is really a wasted opportunity. It really becomes that, and so we'll move on. But I just look at this, and just so you know my perspective, this draft seems more like a 2011 quarterback class without Cam Newton in it than anything else. I mean, that's just kind of me. I was kind of stunned that you give up that much, and I'm really just curious who that quarterback's going to be. It'll be very, very interesting. So locally, we have some guys here from the state of Utah looking to get in the draft and where they're going to go. And one name, the highest profile name, is Bronson Cafusi out of BYU. What do you know about Bronson? What are you hearing about him? We've heard talk late second round, third round. Merrill Hodge comes out and says he's as good as any defensive end in the draft. How do you evaluate Bronson, and where do you see him moving?
I think he's going to be a day two pick, and I think it's going to be somewhere in the second or third round, and I'd probably err toward the higher side of that. Now, there's quite a few good defensive linemen in this draft, especially the defensive tackles, but they go early and often. Everybody's looking for help on the defensive line. So usually by the time you get to the end of the second, early in the third round, that position has already been picked over pretty well. Whereas if Cafusi's still on the board at that point, I think he's going to be a really intriguing option. Obviously the size, he's 6'6 and a half, 285 pounds. And the versatility, I think, is the most intriguing part of Bronson Cafusi. Even though he's so big, he's also a great athlete. You could project him to a defensive end position in either a 4-3 or a 3-4 scheme. He moves well enough on his feet where he could potentially play outside linebacker in an odd front, and relatively productive too. 44 tackles for a loss, 26 and a half sacks during his college career, and kind of reminds me of a Chandler Jones type of player. Now, not quite on that level of talent, maybe a poor man's Chandler Jones, but a similar prospect in that he's kind of a ball of clay that you can mold into whatever you want him to be. So I think in my most recent mock draft, I had him going late in the second round to the New England Patriots. I think that would be a good fit for him. But if he doesn't go in the second round, I think he's going to be off the board somewhere early in the third. And he's definitely a guy who has some buzz right now and helped himself during this pre-draft process on the All-Star circuit at the Senior Bowl.
I mean, I think it's a great spot, too, in New England. Another name within BYU that's got a lot of attention lately after his pro day, and that is wide receiver Mitch Matthews. And you know, he has a private workout with Green Bay coming up. His agent shared he has one more after that. What do you hear about Mitch Matthews? Is he going to be a free agent, or do you think his pro day was so good and then it's timed with this film that he's going to be a guy that's going to be drafted on day three?
Yeah, and the pro day helped him because he ran a lot better than we thought he was going to. And I think that's going to be something that's going to work in his favor and put him back in that mix to be a late-round pick. And because we thought he was going to be maybe a 4.70 type, and I think he ran in the 4.5s or somewhere in that range, so at 6.5 and 6.5 plus. So a big frame. Wide receiver is a competitive position, though, even though that there's 30-some drafted every year. It's a deep position, and I would err on the side of he's not going to be drafted right now, but the pro day was a huge boom for his draft stock, and at the very least now, he ensured he's going to be in a camp as a priority free agent. He's going to get that opportunity.
Some other notable local guys, Miles Kilbrew. This is a safety out of SUU that got a lot of interest leading up to the draft. Is his stock still rising, or is he plateaued a little bit?
No, I think his stock is pretty stable, and he did what he needed to do during this pre-draft process. He went to the Senior Bowl and showed he belonged, showed he wasn't overmatched by the level of competition, and then he worked out pretty well, too. I mean, he definitely looks the part. He's big, he's physical, he's athletic, he'll hit. He checks a lot of the boxes you look for in a strong safety, and I think he has a chance to be a top 100 pick. I would not be surprised if he came off the board in the third round. I think he's kind of jockeying in that second tier at the safety position, battling with maybe four or five other guys to see who comes off the board first. And it might just depend on what type of player you're looking for. But if you're looking for a big, thick, physical, in-the-box safety with top intangibles, I think he's going to be one of your top options in that second tier of safeties. And I think he's going to end up being a third, if worst-case, fourth-round pick when all is said and done.
We talked about Bronson Cafusi earlier, defensive end. There's another one from the state of Utah, local product that's shooting up draft boards. And even seeing on ESPN, Herm Edwards single this guy out. That's James Couser out of SUU. When you hear about James Couser, where is his stock right now?
Yeah, I like James Couser. I think he's a little bit underrated. And he was another player who opened some eyes at the All-Star circuit at the East-West Shrine game when he was there. And talk about productive. He doesn't have necessarily the ideal size and length you look for. He's 6'3 and an eighth, 248 pounds. Only ran about 4.8 scouting combine, but a great motor, extremely active, and crazy productive. 80 tackles for a loss the last 4 years. I mean, that's just crazy numbers. That's the type of stuff you put up in video game when you're playing on easy. 42 and a half sacks, so you can't doubt the production. And you hear the best case scenario, you hear the comparisons to maybe a Jared Allen type player, but I think Kauser's going to be drafted. I think somewhere on day three, for me, I think I have a mid-round grade on him. I believe I have him in the fourth or fifth round, but he's going to be drafted. So it's definitely a very good year for that Southern Utah program with Killebrew and Kauser. And then they also have a defensive back, too, a cornerback by the name of LeSean Sims, who has a chance to be selected as well.
Yeah, terrific. And their head coach now, the assistant head coach at BYU, Ed Lamb. Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com. And follow you, make sure I get your Twitter right, at DraftCountdown. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yep. Awesome. Well, Scott, we certainly appreciate your time and your insights. One last question, we'll get you out on this one. Who is the number one pick in the draft, and then is number two going to move?
The number one pick in the draft, I think, is going to be Carson Wentz, the quarterback from North Dakota State. There's going to be a lot of subterfuge between in the next couple of weeks here, and Los Angeles is going to take advantage of their time on the big stage here and build a suspense, but I think it's going to be Wentz, and I think they know that. And then I think the number two pick is going to be the other quarterback, whether it's Wentz or Goff, but at this point, I just have a hunch, nothing behind it, I just have a hunch that the Browns are going to trade down. But even if somebody comes up, it'll be for a quarterback. So I'm going to say quarterback 1-2 for the second year in a row.
Awesome. Well, Scott, we certainly appreciate your time jumping on with us. A terrific insight. Have a great weekend.
That was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.